You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, we are talking about the future of safety analysis, interactivity, visualizations, and the FDA, and interview with Wei Wang. I know Wei for quite some time from my working experience at Lilly, and so I'm really glad that she is part of this interview today. Also, safety is a really, really interesting topic, especially in combination with all the visualization opportunities that we have now. If you are interested in visualization, I would also strongly recommend you head over to the PSI Special Interest Group on Visualization, the VISSIG, where you will find lots of additional content on visualization. And there's also a monthly interactive challenge there that you can participate in called Wonderful Wednesday. So check out this really, really nice resource as well. If you like this podcast and learn from it, tell your colleagues about it. They may learn from it as well, especially today with this safety analysis topic, which really everybody can benefit from. So head over to theeffectivestatistician.com, copy the link, and send it to your colleagues so that they learn about it as well. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video on demand content library, where we also have all the Wonderful Wednesday webinar recordings that I talked about earlier, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Visit the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of the Effective Statistician. And today I'm with a former colleague from mine. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, Alex?
Very, very good. So before we dive into this really, really interesting topic, because I think safety analysis, when I first entered the industry, was probably for me the most boring thing ever, because it was just the same for each of the different studies. But over time, I got more and more interested into that, especially when I was working a lot on the benefit risk side. And there's so many interesting things also happening now with visualizations and how we can better understand all these kind of different safety signals. But before we dive into that, Wei, please introduce yourself a little bit and what have you been up to bring you to this really, really nice place now where we speak about visualization and safety?
Yeah, thank you. So my name is Wei Wen. I work for Eli Lilly and Company as a statistician. I've probably been in the industry for about 20 years now. Most of my time is focused on safety, about 10 years of my time is focused on safety. Probably in the past 6 years, I've been very interested in visual analytics, done a lot of work, and that's probably why Alex has invited me to this forum to speak for these topics.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you published recently a really, really nice article about it. And there's a lot of things going on that we want to today dive a little bit deeper into this. But when you think about safety analysis, what are for you the main differences to all the efficacy analysis that we are doing?
This is a big topic. So there are a lot of published material that has been discussed, the difference between you know, the analysis in safety and analysis in efficacy. So I probably won't be able to cover all of those. There's probably some highlight here. So the approach for the evaluation of the safety apparently tends to be more exploratory in nature. And to me, I feel the evaluation, interpretation of the safe data can be more challenging than efficacy. This is probably because efficacy usually, the primary measure for efficacy are usually very, very well defined. The safety measure are often heterogeneous and encompass various different sources.
What do you mean by heterogeneous?
So you could have very different safety outcome measures, right? Not like your primary efficacy. Even if you have multiple efficacy outcomes, they're usually very well defined. Mm-hmm. Whereas in safety, across different indication, across different compound, even for the same safety outcome, you could be defined differently, right?
So because we combine different preferred terms, for example.
Right. Not only that, but also, for example, in different therapeutic areas, the same safety outcome may vary a little bit how they were defined. Mm-hmm. And when you compare with external, like, for example, Lilly drug versus, you know, another pharma's drug, they might define the same safety outcome slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So kind of borrow information from other published material, you know, you have to be aware that their definition of safety outcome may not be the same as your definition. Mm-hmm. And also that safety outcome, the same safety outcome can be defined, encompass different data sources. Meaning, you know, you could have adversity defined by looking at AE data as well as lab data, or as well as your vital sign data. You know, those kind of complexity usually involved in safety. Mm-hmm. That makes things more complicated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about the populations that we are looking into? So for efficacy,
that's right. I was going to bring it into that.
Yeah,
So when we recruiting clinical trial, when we recruiting patient, we tend to recruiting low risk population, and this low risk population is a lot of them is considered for the patient safety. We don't want to make patient, you know, recruiting patient that because. We're studying the efficacy. We want to make sure that a patient's safety is not at risk. So a lot of times our data is limited to the specific population we recruited in a randomized clinical trial.
What are kind of specific populations that we usually don't have so much in clinical trials? So for me, you know, of course, pregnant women is very often an exclusion or very
yeah,
often
sometimes. Another common example is, you know, the liver function, right? So you don't want to have those patients who have, you know, already some condition, hepatic condition and kidney condition, right? So these are pretty common that we exclude those patients. And for that matters that it's hard for us to understand patient with those kind of pre-existing condition, what their adverse event would be or safety profile would be like.
Mm-hmm. I think one really good, interesting aspect is this exploratory nature of safety, because
I always kind of
feel it's kind of the other way around. Yeah, where for efficacy, you have a fixed number of variables that you look into, and this is all kind of controlled from a alpha spending perspective and things like that. And you want to prove that there is actually a difference. For safety, it's basically the other way around. You want to, you know, understand what are the safety signals, and you want to make sure you don't miss anything. So kind of from a test perspective, it's kind of the opposite. And also, of course, multiplicity, you can't say, well, we haven't pre-specified this adverse event, so therefore, although there's a big difference, we ignore it. It's a complete different way of thinking about it, isn't it?
You touch on a very important point. In efficacy, if we don't see quote unquote statistically significant result, usually that's the sign that our trial is not successful, right? But in safety, just because we're lacking of statistical significancy, it's not a proof that our drug is safe, right? Quote unquote safe, right? So there's it's very difficult to say that we don't have a problem, right? If you see statistically significant separation, I mean, it's proven there's a difference, but it's very difficult to say there isn't any difference, right?
Yeah. I think for me, in safety, it becomes much more an estimation problem rather than a hypothesis testing problem. So yeah, you want to describe, isn't it?
Yeah. There is a lot of a clinical judgment in also a sort of a, I don't know what to say, but you have to have a way to be able to integrate all the information that you got from the safety data to draw a conclusion, rather rely on whether my test is significant or not.
Yeah.
So which means the visual analytic and the visual review, or the interactive visual review, is becoming very important, to my view, to help the physician to make a scientific decision.
Yeah. In terms of that, so if we talk about visualizations for safety and we want to understand the data, for me, that necessarily includes that we can interact with a visualization. It's I think that is one of the key things probably in there, that if we want to explore the data, we need to be able to interact with the visualization so that we can, you know, filter through different things, that we can hover over certain parts maybe to understand and dig deeper into it, or to sort by various aspects or regroup into subgroups so that we can see, okay, is there a safety signal always in a specific subgroup, things like that.
Right. And also to be able to drill down from summary level information to individual patient level information.
Yeah. So that you can see, for example, okay, this patient had this serious adverse event. Was he on any, you know, co-medication? Did he have any pre-existing conditions that is related to that? All these kind of different things. So it's much more kind of understanding individual patients as well, compared to only looking at, you know, population statistics like proportions and means and things like that. Yeah.
And in safety areas, sometimes it's dangerous to look at group average, because you would be missing out some of the extreme values. And different from efficacy, sometimes our extreme values are of interest. I mean, there could be a subgroup of people that we didn't predefine, that they somehow have a different risk profile compared with the rest of the population. That's important for us to identify in the safety area.
Yeah, I think that's another interesting topic. Whereas in from an efficacy point of view, it's always kind of challenging to say, okay, we carve out a specific population that, you know, with all lots of post hoc analysis, that carries all the benefit. Yeah, and very often in any follow up study, we see that we probably overestimated that. In safety, it's a little bit the other way around. If you can narrow down kind of your safety signal, you can see most of the safety is in, let's say, patients that are over of certain threshold in terms of age and maybe with certain pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. That's quite helpful to know, because then you can maybe exclude them from the label or add certain warnings or things like that, and later on do additional studies to better understand the safety signals there.
Yeah, although you could argue that some of the extreme value may just came in at random, but yeah, we don't want to miss those if those are the case. So that's another different nature that safety have is the goal of safety is to capture any of the safety risk, not necessarily confirmative risk, but we don't want to miss anything.
Yeah. So one of the really interesting things also with safety is that we somehow document what we are all
looking into. So that we, if we just have tables, yeah, static tables, it's pretty clear, okay, we have looked at all these numbers, that's documented, signed off, job done. If we have a interactive visualization with where we can have lots of selections and subgrouping and sorting and filtering and all these kind of different things, how can we document what we actually have looked at, into?
Right. So I guess the solution would be different, depends on your software. Mm-hmm. I believe, you know, there might be different options in other software, but because we are mostly using Spotfire, so I'm going to provide some example that how we mm-hmm. do this in the Spotfire setup. This might be able to help other software users to come up with their own decision. So this Spotfire has something called bookmarking feature.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I think most people have using bookmark in your other browser, like Google Chrome, Internet Explorer, right? So the bookmarking is working similarly in Spotfire, like those web page. The bookmark feature, what it does is save a snapshot of the state of analysis, mm-hmm. which means that when you add a bookmark, basically you can return to the stage where you find something interesting. Either you filter out something or mark something, and the bookmark will bring you back to when you find something interesting. And this bookmark can be also saved.
Okay, with so the document. So you basically can create a document where you have an overview of all the different bookmarks you have with the combining kind of results from it. Yeah, so that you can see, okay, bookmark set, and we have seen from there that there's no safety risk for this endpoint or these subgroups and bookmark
right. set. So in this bookmark, you can trace what you have saved, what you have filtered, and what you have seen before. And the good thing about this bookmarking is bookmark they also provide a URL to the bookmark. Mm-hmm. So when you write a Word document, you can reference those bookmark, or you can even within the package itself, you can have a page that has a summary page that write about, you know, I've observed this and this in this bookmark and these patients having such and such, and therefore I consider they might be of interest for us to consider they're at risk of, you know, something.
Can you also kind of download the visual, the graphic?
You can export the visuals and the tables in the Spotfire environment. Mm. Okay. There are some limitation on because it's interactive, right? So when you export for visual, for table is probably easier, but for a graphic or for figure, you know, the interactive versus real world, there's still something to jump on. Because in the static world, you have a page limitation. So I cannot sometimes fit all the information in a page. Whereas in the interactive world, you can fit everything in one page because you can zoom in and out and you can scroll up and down, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In that case, your exported static output will have the limitation because you can't fit in everything, and the package itself, I mean, the software itself does not provide a way for you to do, okay, I'm going to take a page break here, right? Because there's too complicated in the setting how you do the key page break, right? I don't believe there's any software right now are able to allow an interactive display export and will have the at the same time have the proper page breaking and formatting set up.
Yeah, I think then we would need to get to something that is more kind of HTML files or something like
that's
this
right,
in,
that's right,
in
that's
the future
right.
where you basically have your document not as a, you know, or standard PDF documents or Word documents, but it's more kind of a something like a blog post or something like this where you can basically, you know, move forward and backwards between your dashboard and your visualizations and your text.
And there's also, I don't want to miss the point about the traceability. There's also mm-hmm. Another very important feature that Spotfire offer is for you to be able to do IronPython. use Python is one of the extensions that Spotify allow users to do. Along with that, you can do HTML, can do JavaScript, you can also do R, right? So with IronPython, we actually built in one of the functions in some of our package, which users can trace what subject they have already reviewed. Okay. So in our display, if say, for example, you are looking at patient level information, say graphic patient profile, once a physician finishes with one subject that they review, they click a button and that subject ID will be automatically added to a list. And that list will be saved. So in that case, the users can trace what subject they have already reviewed.
So that's really, really nice for a study level and safety reviews, and especially if you have phase one studies and things like that.
They can even write a comment and have the comments also saved along with that patient ID.
Mm-hmm. So if you speak about these patient profiles, what would be included in that?
That's very, how to say, it depends on how you design them. It's very flexible. Mm-hmm. We have created a patient profile that contains some of the routine safety information. For example, the exposure over time, the adverse event over time, concomitant medication over time, lab over time, vital sign over time. But you can also add additional information. For example, you can add some specific measures. I don't know whether you're familiar with the Klimbeer suicide scales.
Yeah.
And there's also a way for you to put in efficacy over time as well. So it depends on your interest. You can put various different data domain in the patient profile.
So in a patient profile, I would imagine you would have a couple of line graphs, basically, that show kind of, okay, here, these are the different AEs with the different start and stop dates, the different severity could be highlighted in different colors, maybe, and you would have, you know, the dosing displayed in kind of dots for the different when doses were given or when this, depending on what kind of drug and how it's administered, you can have that as well as lines for efficacy or vital signs, all these kind of different things, so that you have basically a quick overview across all the different safety and possibly also efficacy parameters over time. Right. And you can directly see, okay, he first got that adverse event, then he got this concomitant medication that led to this event to stop, but the next event started then, and then he got another concomitant medication and then discontinued or something like this.
Right.
Yeah.
It's graphical display of various different data domain, and then they're all aligned on the same time scale, like you mentioned, that so that reviewers can easily trace within a time sequence on different, you know, efficacy measures or safety measures.
Mm-hmm.
For safety, for example, they can easily trace if an AE is likely to be caused by maybe a concomitant medication or maybe caused by your drug. You know, some of those kind of review can be helpful to have the measures to put into on the same time scale.
When you develop these interactive tools, what are your experiences with that? Is that something that you do in, let's say, 4 weeks, or how long does it take to develop such an interactive safety dashboard?
Depends on how complicated you want your visual package to be. We have some of the simpler visualization that we only provide graphic patient profile and some of the patient level listing, and physician can choose what they want to look at in the listing and to choose which patient they want to look at as regarding the graphic patient profile. That only takes about a day or two to put together.
In Spotify?
Yes.
In Spotify.
In Spotify. And whereas there are some other more complicated package that we created for submission purpose, we have pretty much did all the routine safety review as well as the AESI topics. And that has not only cover most of the routine safety review, but also some of the more complicated, sophisticated analysis, such as logistic regression, some of the Kaplan-Meier survival analysis. Mm-hmm. And basically what that package was done was to allow the physician to review all the safety information they want to look at without the need to go outside to drag information. I think that package took us about 3 months to put together, along with the validation.
Okay, so that's quite a good range in terms of the easiest thing get done in a day and the most complex to get done in 3 to 4 months.
The 3 to 4 months, that also include, that's not just the visual side, that also include us to have to learn to understand the database, you know, how the database, what variable to use, how you define certain outcome of interest, et cetera, et cetera. So given that, if you have done that, I mean, the visual side, it doesn't take that long.
In terms of, if we think about this more kind of really complex approach, how did you get that started? You know, how does the first step look like? Do you look at the database and think about all the different visualizations you can come up with? Or do you start with talking to the physician to understand what he wants to have? How is that progressing?
I think the clinical need comes first.
Okay.
So it's to address what clinical needs are at first step.
So you want to first understand exactly kind of, okay, for this compound, we are specifically concerned about these AEs, these lab values, these concomitant medications and things like that, yeah?
Right now, the way we work is as needed purpose. Mm-hmm. I can see different company may take a different approach. Some company, if they want to do a mass rollout of interactive visualization, they may have a certain, you know, I mean, we were partially doing that too. They may have a certain template already built and say, okay, just use this, because, you know, a lot of the safety needs are very similar, even though the way you define the outcome may be different, but how we design to for the routine analysis, how we design to, or what kind of interest we have on AE data, what kind of interest we have usually on lab data, are similar. So the visualization can be choosing similarly. You may have some little modification here and there. So having a template pre-built, and you can start with the template and show physician and say, okay, here are what we have. Do you think it will cover your clinical need? That can be helpful when you discuss the clinical need with the physician.
Okay.
So we can take a combined approach. We have some template, but we're not saying that use this as it is. We show the physician something and they will, you know, all of a sudden once they see your template, they will have all kind of idea and say, okay, you know, what if I need to do this? You know, can I change this to a different display? That helps us to come up with ideas for some new packages.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really important point, because very often our business partners don't have even the imagination what they could ask for.
And a lot of them are not familiar with interactive visualization. They don't know what it's capable of.
Yeah. And if you then show them kind of, oh, look, if I sort these kind of variables or these kind of patients, for example, by that, then you directly see here all the kind of really severe cases, or here all the patients that have this outcome. And because they're so much used to looking at static things, it's really, really difficult at the beginning. But I think once they get more used to it, they understand, oh, I could ask for this, and that is another opportunity. And you basically, it probably takes a lot of kind of iterations to get to something that's completely stable, isn't it?
Right. That's the benefit of, I don't think it's a disadvantage. Some people may not like it, because in the old world, what we do is we provide a physician with some kind of static report. I think we may have to change them, but the chance we change them is not that high. I mean, the probability we change them, right? Usually they take what we give to them and they may ask for additional one. But in an interactive situation, we're seeing that the statistician, the programmer, as well as the physician need to work more closely. Mm-hmm. We usually would like to have the kind of situation is we propose some displays and we show them what we have, explain to them, you know, well, usually they at the beginning, they need to be a little bit educated to know like how to navigate to find some information and what each display told them. Because this is the other thing that I find that missing from a lot of these training and education is the interpretation of graphic display. I mean, okay. there's sometimes a lot of the education needed to explain to the physician how to read a box plot, how to read a scatter plot, how to read a bar chart. You may think that those are very simple displays, but very often I've seen them, you know, not even look at x-axis and y-axis, right? So you have to, there's some education that you need to do to get physician up to speed.
It's probably good not to just kind of send the link to here's the template, have a look at it and let me know what you think, but right. rather set up a meeting, walk the physician through the different right. displays, the different functionalities, explain here's what you see here, this is the display where you can answer these kind of questions right. best, this is the display where you can ask these questions best, and so really to have a training on the visualization so that right. people can understand it. Yeah.
And when you explain to them that, you know, how to interpret where to find what information, that's usually when they start to say, okay, what if I want to find these, how I find this? And then you would realize maybe you haven't got answer and you need to change your visualization. So that's usually what I see happens. A lot of times with experience, you learn certain clinical question of interest. So in my case, because I've been working in the safety for quite a bit, usually 80% of the question you already got answer in your, you know, first draft. Mm-hmm. And then they just don't know how to get to it. But then there are probably 20% of the cases that you haven't thought about and you can kind of tweak the visual a little bit or choose different displays to help them to understand or to find answers.
Yeah. So basically, in terms of the specifications of your interactive visualizations, they become very much kind of a living document that is constantly updated as you're using the tool?
No.
Developing the tool. So
what we have is we're doing tools by project. Mm-hmm. So for example, for a drug A, say for example, I'm doing a submission package for drug A. What happened is it's going to be a living document and we're open to change up to the point that we're ready to say this is the final document the physician is going to use for their submission work. And, you know, data have been logged and everything is ready, you know, that they're ready to quote the numbers or even export the tables from the visualization to their submission document. And before that, we would do all the validation and quality control of the package, make sure everything is properly reviewed and valid. And we're going to lock down the document.
Okay.
And say no more change. That's it. So that document will be saved as a sourcing document for your submission material.
Mm-hmm. Let's change a little bit gear. And as you talk about submission so much, how can we give regulators like the FDA actually access to these tools so that we don't send them thousands of tables, which I think is quite an outdated approach, and kind of just having the innovations that we don't send a truck to the FDA, but we, you know, let them download gigabytes of tables from some homepage.
Yeah.
So how can we do, you know, give access to interactive tools to them?
This is a very good question. I've been asked this question. I mean, I myself asked this question when I first started with interactive visual, and many people ask the same question, is to be able to share our tools with regulator. As I mentioned, we have created some very nice interactive tool for internal review purposes, and we see a lot of benefit. And we think, you know, if we can share those package with the regulator, that's going to be improve the communication between the industry and regulator. You know, there's going to, you know, improve their efficiency in review our data too. But right now, honestly, we're facing a lot of challenge to share internal built package, interactive package with this regulator. Mm-hmm. And we haven't been able to make that happen. There are some effort that trying to share information broadly, not just with regulator, but externally, right? In general, I'm going to touch upon some of the effort that I'm aware of later. But right now, I want to focus on the challenge because people would ask why can't we, right? So I can't cover every challenge, but I can bring some ideas so people realize some of the challenges at least that we're facing right now. So imagine that we are using Spotfire, but another company may use, say, Shiny. Another company may use the Tableau package, right? So there are various different software for interactive display purpose. And usually this interactive visualization package is running on a company server. So, yeah. For example, we have our Spotfire server. Shiny have we also internally we also have a Shiny server. So, say for example, you're using Shiny server, or you're using Spotfire server. They're all located on a company server, right? So, if the FDA want to access these interactive visualization, they have to access a company server. Sometimes there might be some confidentiality, you know, concern, but usually a company, I believe, we can work out a solution to give regulator access to a server. Let's say we can set up a specific server for regulator access. But regulator usually would have concern to use the data hosted by a sponsor. So essentially, sponsor is hosting that data in our server.
Yeah.
FDA would have concern. For example, they would say, okay, how long are you going to have that data available for us? You know, what if you want to do something? Can you guarantee that, you know, it's dangerous? I can see why. It's dangerous for them to rely on the sponsor to say, okay, I'm in control of the data, right? So it's usually they would like to have, you know, the mm-hmm. data hosted or the display hosted on their server, right? So alternatively, there's other alternatives. People would say, why don't you just send them the Spotfire file, just send them, right? I mean, we can do that. We can send the whole package to them as a file to FDA and say, we're using this package in the review. But this means that FDA or other regulator, they have to purchase the software license and then install in the software in their system. And also they have to have their own expertise in this visualization software, right? So a regulator have to learn different kind of platform. It's really a huge burden for them.
Mm-hmm.
So at least, I mean, I've touched two, but there's some other limitation as well.
Yeah.
Right now, there's not a unified approach in industry as to what software to use for interactive visualization. And I don't think it's fair because I've tried different, I've tried Shiny, I've tried Tableau, I've tried Power BI, I've tried Spotfire. They all have their different strengths and weakness. Depends on each company's need. You may pick different ones.
Yeah. I can see that.
I do want to mention there's two initiatives that there are people working on to try to solve this problem. For example, DIAASA, Biopharmaceutical Safety Evaluation Working Group, they have developed a series of interactive safety graphic tools and made it available. I think they have some GitHub hosted the code behind these interactive display tools. understand.
Yeah, and by the way, we'll put a lot of the links and references in the show notes. So just go to theeffectivestatistician.com, search for the episode with Wei Wang, and then you will see all the references there.
Yeah, and that in my paper also have in the reference to their work and the website that they have those open source application available. And recently, there's a Fuse project that they have done a pilot. This is probably touch upon that you, Alex, you mentioned before. What this pilot did is they share a standalone HTML interactive display in a submission. So what they did is they have their submission document have a hyperlink to this HTML files, and the HTML file will be sent it to FDA.
So where it's basically everything in a container packaged.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's just, you just need a browser to basically open it.
Right, right. So what they did is they can just, well, once the reviewer look at this HTML file, they can just hover over any of the data point and then see the pop-up show up.
Yeah.
There's also drop down for them to choose so that the display will be updated based on the drop down. But I want to mention, because we didn't solve all this problem, there's limitation to these solutions. For example, yeah. In the pilot I'm talking about, they're only one display. They don't have like a full interactive package that we've used internally. You have covered multiple data domains, cover all the safety review needs, right? So have a lot of very powerful interactivities.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think the, if you have Spotfire or any of these tools, lots of the apps is pre-built, and you
right.
just kind of pull things together. And of
right.
course, you can use templates and lots of these things. Whereas if you more or less need to start from scratch and program everything in HTML, that's quite a lot of effort. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's taking a huge amount of effort and maintenance of those. It's going to be very challenging, because it's not that you don't need to touch them. You build one package, you still have to change them based on your review need and based on your compound need.
Okay, thanks so much. That was a really, really good discussion, and where we touched on, you know, what are the differences in terms of efficacy and safety. We touched about validation and traceability. We also talked a lot about what are the benefits of interactive visualizations, especially for safety, and how we can get to something. And lastly, a couple of interesting initiatives that help us to make that more accessible for regulators as well. Is there any kind of final recommendation that you have for the listener?
I think you're probably going to put a link. There's a lot more discussion in the paper that you mentioned, the BioPharm Report 2020
yeah.
winter issue. I believe it's open to public. Everybody should be able to access. I also have a recent publication in the Statistics in Biopharmaceutical Research, 2020, volume 00. And there's a paper on a similar topic with a more focus on safety review approach, the methodology, and there's a lot of example displays on how we build a certain package.
Okay, we'll put all of these links in the show notes. So thanks so much for the interview. It was great to touch base with you. It reminds me of my time at Lilly as well. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. And thank you for the opportunity to speak here.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background. And thank you for listening. Please visit theeffectivestatistician.com to find the show notes. And you can directly use that link and send it to your colleagues. And there you will also learn much more about this podcast to boost your career as a statistician in the health sector. Like always, reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.